have given myself permission to stand here for 20 minutes and not say anything, so relax. There's a lot of people in this room who I've known for more than two decades, and there's people that I've never met, and there's people that I've, well, possibly never will meet. And there's people in this room who I've got an awful lot of respect for, and there's people in this room who there's been difficulties with. And how do I speak to this assembly? I have to give myself time for that. The Buddha said, better than 1,000 meaningless words is one word on hearing which the heart becomes calm. And I think it's worth giving ourselves time to find that one word on hearing which the heart becomes calm. Don't take it literally. It doesn't necessarily mean a word. It can be a sentence or an image or colour. But to find that thing that makes the heart calm is worth devoting our lives to, perhaps. I used to love teaching beginners classes, and it felt very easy to stand up in front of a room of a dozen or a few dozen beginners and talk about the Dharma. But I must confess that when it got to level two classes, I found it really difficult. I felt by level two, people have learned the mindfulness of breathing, the metta bhavana, the importance of spiritual friendship, few other key things. And how can you teach a room full of people who've already got that? I always felt one-to-one was the only way beyond beginner's level. So how do I do this? How do I speak to you? So I'll ask you to be aware of your breath right now. And be aware of the movements of your belly, of your ribs, your shoulders. And on the out-breath, I'd like you to say silently, I do not know what's going to happen next. On every out-breath, I do not know what's going to happen next. And on the in-breath, say silently to yourself, and I can respond. So, yeah, thank you to Mahamati and Arya Jaya. I felt very encouraged by a lot of people to put myself forward for this. It's not a job, it's not a role, it's a life of international order convening. I felt very encouraged by people who have dedicated their lives to working for the order, like Mahamati. And we got here on Sunday, and I bumped into one of the staff who live here, works here, who's worked here for over 30 years. And he said, you guys first came here in 1992. And then he said, is Mahamati coming? And he said, I really love Mahamati. And I really love Mahamati as well. I also felt encouraged to put myself forward for this role by people who feel themselves to be quite marginalized from the order, to be feel quite isolated or separate, or that they don't fit in. And with all that, I felt I couldn't refuse in the end. I couldn't not put myself forward with such a wide variety of people encouraging me to do so. There were certainly people who were cautious, and I definitely received some very, very good feedback leading up to taking on or putting myself forward for this role. And yeah, I love that tradition that we've got of giving each other feedback. I think some of it was delivered with such care and beauty and in the spirit of dialogue and communication. It was very, very... I find it such a privilege to, if people have the, can give the time and the energy to give good, crisp feedback that actually does, it arrives in me, and it's just like, I've been seen, and I can change that, I can adapt, I can transform that side of myself. So yeah, I, as Mahamati said, I want to serve Bhante. And Bhante with me, when I spent time with Bhante, he was very, very, he was scrupulous with me. Don't generalize about the order. He would seem to be saying, don't assume anything. Don't think that you know an order member unless you really do know them. When I was ordained, there was a very strong culture, I think, in the order, which I would summarize as to question another order member's going for refuge is tantamount to putting yourself outside the order. Yeah, that was a very strong part of the tradition that I got ordained into. To question another's going for refuge is tantamount to putting yourself outside the order. I remember Dhiramati once pulling out a yellow card when someone hinted that another order member might not have been ready. And as I see it, from my perspective of not knowing that much, that tradition that allows us to be part of an order where we can trust the going for refuge of other order members without meeting them, that tradition is the responsibility of the public preceptors. That's a magic that they somehow wield. Yeah? I don't know how, but that's a magic that they're entrusted to wield, to keep that possibility that when we meet an order member, we can relax into that level of trust. And we have our part to play in that. And our part, those of us who are not public preceptors, our part to play in that, well, public preceptors as well, is every order member we meet, let's assume that in the moment we're talking to them, they are effectively going for refuge. You're sitting at the breakfast table with someone on this convention, someone you've not met. Just assume that they're effectively going for refuge. Let that be the forefront in your mind with every interaction that you meet, every interaction that you have. May our communication with one another be sangha. May our communication with one another be sangha. So I feel, since Bhante died, I feel quite strongly that we are part of an experiment. We're experimenting. We're working out what does it mean to be Dharma farers in the 21st century, in the various many, many cultures that we are living in. And we have an amazing basis of practice. And I've got a little list that I'll read out of what I think is the basis of practice. You'll have a different list. I'm sure there'll be overlaps. The system of practice, the three myths, Kalyana Mitratar. We've got a very particular and practical take on ethics in the order. And of course, our tradition of ordination, which is based so strongly on friendship. And based so strongly on commitment to the Dharma and on commitment to each other. And of course, Bhante's invitation to us to be individuals with all of the depth and responsibility that comes with being an individual in Bhante's understanding. And part of being an order member is us being companions to each other in the holy life. And that is such a mystery. How can we be companions to each other in the holy life? One way, of course, is the chapter. The chapter, as I was taught, a chapter is an ongoing weekly or fortnightly spiritual workshop. Yeah, what a challenging statement, eh? An ongoing spiritual workshop. And there's something that I really love about chapters, and it's something about the quality of communication that we develop, and of taking each other in, of listening to each other. Especially, I love chapters when we confess stuff as it's happening in the moment. When we're sitting in the chapter meeting, confessing what's happening in the chapter meeting. Yeah? Particularly confessing the mind precepts. What's happening in our minds as we're sitting there with our companions in the holy life, and then exploring that together. So I'm in two chapters, and one of them we sit in silence and we speak out of silence, and in my other chapter we often all talk at once. And so it's not so much about form. The form can be so different in different chapters. One of the great things about our job, Avyajiva and my job, is that we get invited to visit chapters. So we see a lot of how different chapters work. And yeah, I think that's so good. And on these conventions, we often invite people to meet in temporary chapters. We often call them chapter groups to avoid confusion with chapters. And that's a different thing to your normal chapter, because it's people that you don't know. And maybe that will bring a fresh perspective to your normal chapter, if you're in a chapter. If you're not, I hope you have a spiritual workshop and spiritual friendship in other areas. But let's take that line really seriously. May our communication with one another be sangha. And I've always thought of that as a great challenge. But I'm questioning that now. I really question whether that is a challenge. May our communication with one another be sangha. A few years ago, Subhuti talked about three myths. And I'm given these myths by Avalokiteshvara, the four-armed Avalokiteshvara. In one arm, Avalokiteshvara holds the mala. So he's counting things, he's developing things, yeah, the developmental myth. In the other hand, he's holding a flower, emergence, yeah. Perhaps discovery of the Buddha within, or the natural emergence of the Buddha from within. And in the other two hands, the Anjali Mudra, devotion or surrender. This mudra also is holding the bodhicitta, and the bodhicitta in Chintamani is like a surrender to all beings, surrender to seeing all beings as empty and to loving them. So I've been thinking about the myths from a different perspective, more as lifestyle. We talk about the hero's myth. And the myth of depth and intensity is part of the hero's myth. And that's great. That's a wonderful myth. I've lived by that myth for many years. They're always seeking the depth and the intensity. Mahamati mentioned the caves. I'm fond of meditating in the mountains. But we also have the myth of Royokan. Royokan, who spent, I think it was 40 years in a strict Zen monastery before basically flipping out, running off to the mountains, living on his own, delighting in nature, falling in love, drinking sake, and just being a delightful old monk. Yeah. And he's famous for those little windows into his life, yeah, his life which was sad and full of beauty and full of joy and full of love. And in the order, there are order members who have become old very, very beautifully, very gracefully. And I think of Abaya with this. I was in a chapter with Abaya many years ago, and Abaya went on solitary, and he was wandering in the woods on solitary, and he saw a piece of wood on the ground. And he just walked past this piece of wood, but it caught his attention. And I think the next day he went back and he found this piece of wood and he picked it up. And he started sculpting it. And that moment, I don't know if this is exactly true, but that moment was the transition from his life of being really fully involved in the institutions of the movement to the life of being an artist. And Abhay has always been a great inspiration to me since before that time, but especially that moment. And he made that transition so beautifully into letting go of the path of responsibility and entering into a different path. I think, just as an aside, I think it's really wonderful that we are an aging order. Sometimes we talk about the fact that we're an aging order in slightly disappointed terms or in negative terms, but it's actually the best sign of success we could ever have, that we're an aging order. People generally don't leave. They stick around for years, for life. Yeah. If you only ever ordained 20-year-olds, in 100 years, we'd have a really old order. So let's celebrate that. Yeah. We'll never have a single figure like Banti again. We never know the future. But I suspect we'll never have a single figure like Banti again. Instead, we'll have dozens, hundreds of old order members who have done the journey, done the various myths. So we have the myth of the artist, we have the myth of the scholar. And yes, so through beauty and wisdom, that our communication with one another becomes sangha. And maybe that isn't a challenge. Maybe that's just beauty. We have the myth of the Kalyana Mitra. We can devote our lives to friendship. And maybe that isn't a challenge. It's not a challenge to be Sangha. We just love. And we just help strangers. We have the myth of the kind neighbor. Just simple kindness. The myth of the grandparent. I'm staying with my parents at the moment quite a lot. They're getting very old and they're fading and they're fighting into the last stage of life. And there are moments when they channel the perfect grandparent and it's beautiful to see. And sometimes they channel the contented old swan gracefully arranging itself on the bank to die. So the myth of letting go of life, the myth of equanimity, the myth of turning away from the world. I remember sitting with Banti's body for the week after he died, and even after a week, I would look at his face, and I would actually have to work quite hard to remember that he was dead. He looked so alive. Other people that I've seen after they've died, their face has changed so much. A lifetime of stress, a lifetime of anxiety falls away when they die. Banti had let go of all that years ago. When he died, his face didn't change. And surely the goal, whatever there is, whatever myth we have, has to have the flavour of letting go, of contentment, of equanimity. And maybe it isn't a challenge to be Sangha, we just relax. Can you pass me that puja book, Utpaliti, please? The ghost child, the madman. Maybe through radical spontaneity we become Sangha. The disciple. I love that myth of the disciple, to let go of your own will and to surrender to the will of the guru, or to the will of your friend, to the will of your Sangha, or just to conditionality. Let go of your own will and surrender to conditionality. And maybe that isn't a challenge. Maybe we just commit. And the contented, equanimous old nobody floating quietly into the void. And maybe that isn't a challenge. So on conventions, I'm a fan of chapter groups. They're more random than you meeting up with your friends. You meet new people, and everybody will have a different idea of the purpose of that chapter group. Everyone will have a different idea of what it means to lead a spiritual life. Everyone will have a different idea of the purpose or lack of purpose in that chapter group. And like a convention, or ideally like any moment in life, that's an opportunity to stop and question your life. Every event like this is an opportunity to stop and question your life. This is the going forth. Stop and question your assumptions. Look at your life through other eyes, through the eyes of Avalokiteshvara, through the eyes of other people in your chapter, through the eyes of the person on the other side of the breakfast table. And this is the 75th anniversary today of Banti's going forth. And how do we celebrate that? The Banti that I knew, he wasn't interested in talking about the movement. He refused to let me generalize about the order. And it wasn't like he was going forth from a fixed view about the order. It was just like he didn't have a view about the order. And him not having a view would just shine a light on my views about the order. Oh no, Saraha, you can't say that. So-and-so's not like that. He was interested in people. He was interested in people's practice. He was interested that people were following their own golden thread and that they were in harmony with the people around them. So a suggestion for chapter groups: sit in silence. Listen to your being. Remember to arrive. Remember that you and the others are going for refuge. And remember that you don't know what will happen next. I remember in my first days of chapter, we used to say, you sit in silence until you know what you don't want to talk about, and then you talk about that. Do you remember that? But I'd suggest a different practice. You sit in silence, perhaps longer. Perhaps you have to listen more carefully. And listening to the same place, that place of going for refuge, as Padmavajra said, if we shut up, we can hear the breath, we can feel the breath of the Dakini. We sit in silence, we wait. And we wait until we find out what we do want to talk about. That bit of us that is effectively going for refuge. Listen, what does that bit of you want to talk about? And then talk about that. And that process of listening, it takes time. So most likely, while you're waiting, you're listening, you're attentive to the breath of the Dakini, most likely somebody else will start talking first. And you have to renounce what you want to talk about and talk about what they want to talk about. That's the renunciation of chapters. A chapter is a renunciation. Any conversation is a renunciation. Renouncing what you want to talk about and engaging with what the other person wants to talk about from that same place of you're going for refuge, you engage with what the other person wants to talk about. So yeah, let's not share what we already know in our chapters. Let's not share what we already know when we talk to another order member. Let's wait, let's pay attention, let's listen for that word that makes the heart calm. So there were two types of renunciation, just like there were two types of patience. There's renunciation with annoyance, and there's renunciation with love. There's patience with annoyance, and there's patience with love. Love for yourself. This little being sitting here, not able to talk about what it wants to talk about. How can you not love yourself in that moment? And there's love for the others. There's love for this practice of being in a chapter, of this process of listening to yourself, being in touch with whatever metaphor works for you of what I'm trying to talk about, and this practice of really trying to deeply be with other people. And you know what that feels like? Patience with annoyance. Yeah, we know what that feels like. And patience with love. We know what that feels like. It's more subtle. It's more intricate. It's a very rich experience, patience with love. It has many facets. And I believe it's possible that through communication with one another, we can suddenly discover that we are Sangha. And this is For me, this is a huge belief. It's like believing that we're all Buddhas. And most of us, we've forgotten it some of the time, and we've got a bit distracted by something. We've got a bit distracted by being a bit hungry. We've got a bit distracted by a bit of fluff on our jumper or something. Yeah? But we're Buddhas, and we're sitting with other Buddhas. So yeah, this new life that I'm embarking on with Arya Jaya, I've said before, and I'm not joking when I say this, my plan with this new role that I've taken, not a role, this new life that I've taken on, my plan is to gain enlightenment in a meeting. It might be a chapter meeting, but probably not. It'll probably be a meeting with Arya Jaya and Ratnadharani and many other great beings. What is a meeting? In the order, if you work for the order, you're in a meeting. You're in a room with great beings. And you're all very different. You've all been practicing for years this path of being an individual. Of course you're very different. You've got different opinions and different perspectives and different myths. And you're trying to agree on something that's really important to all of you. So I mentioned the mind precepts. Abandoning covetousness for tranquility, I purify my mind. Changing hatred into compassion, I purify my mind. Transforming ignorance into wisdom, I purify my mind. I wish this meeting would end and I could go outside. Abandon covetousness for tranquility. I wish so-and-so would agree with me. Abandon covetousness for tranquility. I wish so-and-so would just stop being so-and-so. Changing hatred into compassion. And what better place than a meeting to really face our ignorance? Transforming ignorance into wisdom. It's not our book learning that becomes wisdom. It's not our cleverness that becomes wisdom. It's our ignorance. Transforming ignorance into wisdom. What better place than a meeting with great beings to really see and feel the subtleties of your own ignorance. So I don't think about depth of practice anymore. I think these days more about subtlety of practice. And let's get more subtle. Let's get more subtle with our minds, with our practice, particularly with our confession practice. Let's practice those mind precepts. Yeah. If you're ever sitting in chapter and you can't think of anything to confess, think of the mind precepts. There's probably a dozen things in the past 10 minutes that you could confess. So yeah, let's do that. And let's make mistakes. And let's experiment. And let's communicate in a way that transforms us into Sangha. Let's be tentative and let's be bold. And let's believe the Buddha when he says, one word on hearing which the heart becomes calm. Can you sit in a meeting with all the emotions that arise in meetings? And can you give yourself the time and the perspective to find the word, to find the perspective that makes everyone relax, that makes everyone breathe out, that makes everyone calm? Let's put time and effort into finding that word. It might be a phrase, an image, a colour. It might be a story. It might be a myth. And you can find it. You are effectively going for refuge. You can find the next step for yourself and for other people. So, now we go into chapter groups. And there are boards in the reception over in, what's the room? Peel? Peel. The rooms in Peel. And the locations are there. And these groups will be every day at 4 p.m. We've done that deliberately. There's other things happening at 4 p.m. as well. There's some other great things happening at 4 p.m. in here. Yeah. So you might find that every day your chapter group has a different selection of people, because some will be in here and some will be there. Maybe you can discuss that on the first meeting, and maybe you can find another time to meet as a chapter group. Yeah. Or maybe you can just accept that you don't know what's going to happen, you don't know who's going to be there. Cool.